We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by the Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. The world is waking up, and this is the tipping point.
Ladies and gentlemen, Scott McKay coming to you here on the 7th of February. This is today's economic update with our economist extraordinaire in the house that I keep on retainer for an exorbitant price, Dr. Kirk Elliott, double PhD, economics, theology. That's how he keeps his ship running straight. But we have an interesting segment tonight. We are now right on the heels of the, or say on the toes of the State of the Union, which would be pretty interesting to come to the forefront of today's conversation. It's going to be pretty awesome to listen to the bullshit that's going to come out of their clone or mask puppet, whatever he is, a CCP wind-up doll. That ought to be interesting. But as for now, let's jump right into that economic update. Dr. Kirk Elliott, come on in. Sit down and let's talk about crazy shit that's going on this week.
Brother, I don't even know what to think about the State of the Union tonight. I mean, part of me is so morbidly curious to watch it, even though it's all going to be a bunch of junk, because you know that there's going to be sound bites that we will be laughing about for a long time. But I don't know if we should laugh, because the rest of the world sees this guy as our president, and that makes me want to cry, because it's just bizarrely awful. But what I do know that he's going to talk about tonight is his weird mic drop moment last week when he gets up on stage, you know, at the press conference and says, "Hey, everybody, unemployment's the lowest it's been in 53 years. I'm done." And then he walks off. It's like, what? Of course he's not going to answer any questions after a statement like that, because it's pure hogwash. I mean, seriously, it's the worst. So you think back to the Trump years and the 20 years of Reagan's economy, right, that spanned him and Bush and Clinton, right, where the economy was robust and booming. And it's like, do people really think that unemployment is lower than it's been in 53 years? I mean, do they really think that? I mean, but yet some people do, because I was watching news snippets from MSNBC and CNN and ABC, and it's like, okay, they're all think that this is true. And but okay, the reality is, who knows that it's not true? Pretty much every CEO in America, when you've got Bezos laying off 18,000 people at Amazon, Meta laying off 11,000 people, Microsoft laying off 12,000 people, Salesforce laying off 10% of its workforce, Tesla laying off 10% of its workforce, Goldman Sachs laying off 3,500, Bed Bath & Beyond is going to file for Chapter 11, right? You've got Wells Fargo that shut down their entire mortgage division. It's like, give me a break. These are all tens of thousands of people being laid off in one shot, but per company. And so for him to say that, so it's like, okay, how can he actually justify such a statement? Well, I'll tell you, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, their metrics are just awful. So let's say, Scott, that you're unemployed. You're out there beating the sidewalks, knocking on doors, trying to find a job. Well, you do that for so long and you get so discouraged that you absolutely just say, I'm not going to look anymore. It's like, I might as well live under a bridge, right? Mm-hmm. So are you still unemployed after that decision? Yeah, of course you are, right? But the government doesn't view you as unemployed anymore because it was your decision to stop looking. So they pull you out of the numbers to even measure against. So that's one reason why they can say, oh, unemployment is low, because they pull all these people out. They're not even considered unemployed anymore. Or one step further is, let's say that you are some kind of high paid engineer at Microsoft making $180,000 a year. Well, you lose your job because they're just part of the 12,000 people that they laid off. So, but you still have a family to feed. So what do? You're going to go to Kohl's and get a part-time job. You maybe go to Chick-fil-A, get another part-time job, and maybe find a third one somewhere. So now you've got three jobs making half as much as you used to. What do they call that? They call that increasing two jobs, right? Because they lost one, but now you're working three. So that's a plus two in these number metrics. So, but the poor guy's making half as much as he used to working three jobs. So these are where their numbers are coming from. And it's all just a bunch of lame sauce, just junk. That's just pure lies. So these are the kind of lies that are going to be spewed out tonight. Because the economy is not strong. Like, if we look at, okay, so let's look at the housing market, right? So the housing market, if you look at a chart of 2005 through 2008, housing market was booming, right? And then you had the big crash in 2009. Well, if you look on a chart, that's half. That buildup to then is half of what the values are today. So real estate has gone through the roof. But what's different? What's different this time is what's going to make it intensely worse is, number one, we still had low interest rates then. Right now, interest rates are higher than they've been in 40 years. 2009 wasn't 40 years ago. So it was in that within that time frame, right? So you still didn't have the massive interest rates. The inflationary pressures that we have now are significantly worse. And the national debt back then was maybe 10 trillion. Today it's 31 trillion, right? Everything is exponentially worse than what it was. So this fall, you know, the fall that we're seeing in prices, not this fall in time frame, but the fall that we're seeing, the collapse that we're seeing in real estate prices is going to be significantly worse than in 2009. But somehow tonight, we're going to hear a spinning that the economy is robust, that people are working, that they've actually got a hold of the inflationary pressures, which is why the rate increases that they're doing are lower than they were 3 months ago. 3 months ago, it was a 75, 3/4 of a point hike. Then it was 0.5 point hike. And now it was 1/4 of a point hike, because they're going to say inflation's under control and we get to slow down the rate of growth. The bottom line is, it's still growing. When last month, well, let's say 3 months ago, it was the highest interest rates we've had in 40 years. Then 2 months ago, it was even higher than that. Last month, it was even higher than that, because they keep raising rates. So rates are as high as they've been in, like, since the late 70s, early 80s. And yet they say that they're winning the war on inflation. They are not winning the war on inflation until interest rates start to decline. We're not seeing hikes anymore, but they say, okay, prime rate, instead of 4.75, we'll bring it down to 4.5 or 4.25 or 3.5, right? We're not seeing that. We're still seeing increases, which means that the inflation is still there. It's still persisting. You know, interview any farmer or rancher in Montana or Texas. What is the cost of feed? It's going through the roof. What is the cost of fertilizer? Well, if you can even get it, it's growing exponentially. So they're still slaughtering cattle because they can't afford to feed them, which is why we've got massive meat, you know, prices that are going through the roof. Beef is going through the roof. Everything's going through the roof. And here's Biden saying, we're winning this economic battle. We're winning this thing, right? And this is the kind of garbage that we're going to hear tonight.
Yeah, the sad thing is, Kirk, is a fact, is they're never would be this kind of language an economic battle, right? The only reason we have it is because they've staged this thing. So it is a battlefield. We had John Michael Chambers on today talking about when they captured us on this level, obviously even long before 1871, but the Federal Reserve Act, Jekyll Island, all that stuff that they did. And ever since they engineered that takeover of our currency, they murdered the country. Even Woodrow Wilson, who's a total scumbag, this is what these bankers do, is they reach out to somebody, hey, you know, we need somebody that'll do what we need them to do. Here's a guy. What do? They go to Princeton, grab a professor, you know, court him. Hey, we can make you president, blah, blah, blah. You do this for us, whatever. So they bring the Wall Street or the bankers money, and then they put Woodrow Wilson in, and he sells us out. He even said it on his deathbed, said the exact same thing. You know, I fear I've destroyed my country. Well, damn right you did, you scumbag. He did it because of his own self-interest. So none of this language would exist if we hadn't handed it over to them, because economies don't rise and fall on cycles. It's all bullshit. It just absolutely, they don't rise and fall on cycles when left to a laissez-faire model. We've never had laissez-faire capitalism here either. It's always been a managed economy. It's like we're not a democracy, right? We never were. We're a republic. But now you even have Republicans always talking about our democracy is the last term that I want anywhere near me, because for the same reason is democracy is one step from tyranny. It's mob rule. And it gives people an example of what democracy really is. Say majority rules, right? Absolutely. Whatever the mass of the people want over the smaller group, then that's what it's going to be. Okay. Let's just simplify an example. You have people that become a separatist community, right? And so they go up into the mountains and there's going to be five of them. They just want to live freely. Okay. But we're going to institute our own little form of self-governance and we'll make a democracy because that's the best way to go. All right. You got five people, three men, two women, three men, two women, right? And they're in their monthly meeting where they sit down, and we're now 3 months into this and they're all unmarried, by the way, right? None of them are married to each other or dating. And finally, the men say, you know what? You know, I have been laid for 3 months, right? No girls up here. I think I want to put forward a motion that any man in our community can have sex with any woman anytime he wants. Now, you think that's absurd? Imagine this. What's plausible? What is a plausible vote on that? Plausible that it could be three men voting against two women who are the recipients of this tyranny, right? So there you go, folks. There's your democracy, majority or mob rule. The reason we are a republic is this very reason, the very reason. In a republic, you have groups of people, which may be congressional districts or whatever, okay? You have a representative that's elected to represent a certain group of people. In this particular example, in this country, it's a region. It's not even a demographic. It's a region based on population. 435,000, it's probably more today, but that's what it was. 435,000 people constitute a congressional district. There's one representative, one vote in Washington. Now, so if this little community was a republic, you'd have two groups being represented, women, men. They get together, the men vote in their representative for them, and the women vote in theirs. So it becomes a one-to-one male-to-female vote. They put forth the same legislation in this republic. It's highly likely, unless this lady's a total sadist, that it's going to be a one-to-one tie, right? And I've come across a few in my time that would say, no, let's go with the other. Let's go with that vote. But anyways, I'm just kidding. Actually, I'm not. But so it's a one-to-one tie, which means what? Legislation dies. There's no tiebreaker here, right? So that's a republic. All the language that they've used on us over time, including Republicans, our democracy, fork your democracy. I don't want anywhere near a democracy because, as we know, it's one step away from tyranny. So it's a republic. But all this language that they've constantly used, and even in the economic side, we sit here, we look at it, and we use it too, right? What do we call economic cycles? All the shit we say, which is their language book for their system that they set up to make sure we fail when they want us to fail so they can gather all of our stuff for virtually no money and then pump it up, sell it back to us. So anyways, just a little side note rant there on all of that. I gotta wonder, Kirk, honestly, it's so insane that this thing will walk out there and say what they say, all right? And I haven't seen any of the media. I don't know if there's outrage that people are like, the Republicans are going crazy attacking these kind of statements. Who knows? But the simple fact is that if the American people aren't going to wake up to this insanity when they're coming right out saying, everything's great. It's kind of like, folks, Eden isn't burning. It's burnt. Like, look around you.
Right. Well, Scott, take it one step further. Okay, so you've got democracy, which is a bunch of garbage. It's mob rule, which is why the wisdom of our founding fathers was so wise, right? And they put together the Republican type way, a republic that we have. Well, what we're seeing right now isn't democracy or republic. We've got laws that are being put down on us through administrative rule that nobody voted for. They were appointed people. We've got central bank digital currency coming, which is actually IMF, Bank of International Settlements, the World Economic Forum. Who are these people? We didn't even vote for them, not even as a representative in a republic, right? So we've got international rules coming down that we all are supposed to just swallow and say, okay, this is okay. This is going to be good. You know, central bank digital currency is going to save the day to the banking system when yesterday alone, the basically CEO of Bank of America said, we've got some serious problems, right? And we're going to run out of money as a government. Well, now what? We've got, because none of these people were actually voted in, right, that are doing some of the stuff. So they're going to bring central bank digital currency in to save the day on something that we never even voted for. None of our representatives even voted for that we voted for, right? So here's where, you know, and I listened to, I know your talking points and what you talked about with John Michael Chambers earlier today about the Fed and how all that came to be, and systematically we were brainwashed into thinking that it's a federal thing and it's got reserves, and it's not. It's cartel owning banking families, right? You know, just if anybody wants to know, just read The Creature from Jekyll Island from G. Edward Griffin. It's an amazing story of what our stupid banking system is all about. But even the CEO of Bank of America says we've got some serious problems. He said that today. But here's where central bank digital currency is not going to be the savior of banking. In fact, it's going to be the devil of banking, right? So we think that we've got a fiat-based currency now that causes massive inflation because they can print it without discretion. It still takes some work to do that, right? You actually have to print the money, right? Get it into circulation. So there's work to even paper money. When you have a central bank digital currency, all it takes is some nerd at a computer and says, okay, I'm going to add 8 zeros to our number, hit enter. I mean, you can cause inflation without even work, right? Because all you have to do is add a bunch of zeros to the balance sheet, and you just created trillions of dollars of extra currency that's a digital format that took absolutely zero work to get that done. So here's where I think the emergence of central bank digital currencies could bring a hyperinflation so fast because it actually has no tangible backing. So now we've got this battle of ideologies. We've got this battle for monetary supremacy globally. And it's like World War II. You've had the Axis powers and the Allied powers, right? So the new Axis power block is the BRICS nations. So you've got China, Brazil, Russia, India, China, I mean, all of these countries, but now they're adding Egypt, Saudi Arabia, they're getting rid of the petrodollar, they're doing all this stuff, right? So what is it that they're doing smartly that the West, you know, the banking system in London and New York are not doing? Well, they're saying, hey, our stinking central bank digital currency is going to be more awesome than yours because we're going to back ours with gold, right? So they're actually using that carrot to bring people in because even they know that their system is broken. How do I know that they know that their system is broken? If you go back to a chart of official gold holdings by central banks from 2009 to now, so what happened in 2009? Big, huge, massive market collapse. You had you had extreme political measures, new bills that were written to the Dodd-Frank Act, all these things, right, that came about back then. So you look at this, and before 2009, the amount of central bank gold holdings was coming down, 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 down. That's when it hit its low point. But ever since 2009, the amount of gold being owned by central banks as a de facto backing of the currency is going through the roof. You're never going to hear about this because they poo-poo gold, but they've been buying it. Not only, they're not buying it by the ounce or by the pound or by the ton, they're buying it by the thousands of tons, yeah. Right? So you look at countries along the Central Asian corridor, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, United Arab Emirates, China, they're literally amassing tons, thousands of metric tons of gold to back their currency. So we think we've got problems now, Scott, as the US dollar is tanking. Just wait until you get central bank digital currencies. And now you've got a new economic warfare struggle where the BRICS nations that are going to back their central bank digital currency with gold against countries that aren't. What are you going to pick? People would pick the one that's backed by gold because it has real value. So the case in point, what happens when a country doesn't have tangible backing behind its currency? It devalues and you go into a hyperinflation. Venezuela, when they were printing without discretion, now they had a 1,000,000% inflation last year. Zimbabwe, Weimar Republic, Germany. But even just last week, February 1st, Lebanon actually devalued their currency by 90% in one day. Why? They didn't have any tangible backing behind the Lebanese currency. So I don't even know what the Lebanese currency is called, but let's just say it's the dollar. So you had 100 Lebanese dollars in the bank. The very next day, you had 10. What does that mean? It means that nobody wants their currency anymore. They've been printing without discretion, causing inflation, and to actually have it have standing globally so people would want it, they had to devalue it. They had to take some, I mean, they just took extreme measures and stole 90% of people's wealth overnight because their currency stunk so bad. So this is going to be the case of every single currency, and it has been the case throughout history. When they print without discretion, without tangible backing, well, then you've got problems. And this is where people say, well, Kirk, we've had a fiat-based currency for a long time in America. It's like, no, we really haven't. Throw rotten tomatoes at me when I say this, because we really haven't. Now, we think that we have because we keep printing a bunch of money, but the only reason we've been able to print a bunch of money is because we don't have gold backing. Nixon pulled us off closed the gold window in the 1970s. But since then, we've had the petrodollar. So we went from gold backing of our US dollar to oil backing of our US dollar, because when every international settlement of oil was traded in US dollars, it's built in demand for our currency. Technically, we had backing. But with the rise of the BRICS nations, they're super smart in how they're playing this economic war. They basically said, hey, Saudi Arabia at Davos said, we're not going to take US dollars anymore for any of our trading partners in oil. So they're going to take the yuan from China, the ruble from Russia, the peso from Mexico, you name it, any country in Europe, they're going to take the euro in exchange for their oil. Nail in the coffin after nail in the coffin, eliminating the petrodollar. So now we can finally say the US dollar basically is a fiat-based currency. And the more that we print, the more that we devalue it, we're going to enter the same fate as every other country throughout the world. And this is the danger to our republic. Because people, when their money is stolen out of their wallet, they're going to freak out, right? It's like when the euro became a currency, 35, 40 years ago, whenever it wasn't like the European Union had just the euro all of a sudden. People in Germany didn't want to give up their national sovereignty for a euro. They still traded in the mark. People in France didn't want to give up their national sovereignty. They still had the franc. Or the lira in Italy, or the Dutch guilder, you name it. They still trade in that for a while, but here's what happened. After a few years of that, the euro finally won over, right? But this one's different. Central bank digital currency is not giving up your national sovereignty. It's giving up your individual sovereignty because it's your own bank account, right? So this is where it's intensely personally different. And we will have central bank digital currency guaranteed. In a world where there's no guarantees, I will guarantee that one because 90% of the central banks are moving towards it. But whether we keep it or not is up to us at this point. Are we going to accept it? Once it's here, are we going to accept it? Or are we going to say, no, we're not going to give away all of our financial privacy and all of our freedom for some to be some digital entity in some globalist technocrat's digital world? We're going to say, we're going to use silver for barter, or we're going to use some other cryptocurrency, or we're going to use a gold-backed dollar. There will be other alternative currencies that come to the fold. So that's where the economic battle really starts. We've all lost the battle because we have people that we let basically create this thing that we didn't vote for. We don't even know who they are, right? They're international organizations that have been building this, or individuals like Bill Gates with OpenAI infrastructure, right? And they're putting $10 billion into this stuff to actually be the computer that determines our digital social profile, that gives these central bank digital currencies the ability to cut us off from buying or selling whenever they want. These aren't politicians. These are just rich people that own companies that decided we're going to do this to the American people or to the people globally. Ultimately, there's going to be a revolt when people realize what just came down the pike. And sadly, I sort of agree with Nancy Pelosi. Don't shoot me. But when she said a while back, we've got to vote this stupid bill in so we know what's in it, people aren't going to know the evil of central bank digital currency until it's here, right? But then when it's here, that's where our actions are going to determine whether we keep it or not, right? People are going to want to trade in silver. They're going to want to trade anything. If you're a merchant and you happen to be an evangelical or a Catholic and you have a store, you're not going to want to take central bank digital currency because you're going to think it's the mark of the beast, right? If you're a if you're a libertarian, you're going to say, I'm not going to have spyware in my bank account. This is the ultimate loss of freedom and privacy ever. You're going to have people group after people group after people group that says, no way, I am not taking this. This is where the war begins for our financial privacy and for our financial freedom. And it's truly, you know, like your intro on every one of your show, it's up to us what we get with our freedom, right? It's up to us who we vote for. It's up to us who we don't vote for. It's up to us if we're going to accept this central bank digital currency. So even though we get it, I still have this inside of me, this inner fight that says it's not over. It's not over until actually everybody says, yeah, we're going to keep this dumb thing and give away all of our privacy and freedoms because the economy is so bad. Biden's killing it so bad. The global elites are killing it so bad that I can't afford to feed my kids. I can't afford to even give to my church anymore. I can't afford to keep heat or air conditioning on in my house. I can't afford to pay my rent or my mortgage. At that point, people are going to willingly give up their freedoms. And I just hope and pray that there's enough of us that don't. So this isn't our lot in life, is to be global serfs to a global communist command and control economy where it's all about people control. Scott, this is the edge of where we're living right now. And that is the result if people don't wake up and realize the evil that's behind central bank digital currency.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I was just formulating a new battle plan in my head as you're walking through this. I'm thinking this is going to be awesome because when they come out with social credit scores, we're going to start a new Patriot Street Fighter custom shirt where you can send in your social credit score. We're going to put that number right on your chest. And I think right away, I'm going to be able to walk around having won the contest like Superman, pulling my shirt open and showing me I got the lowest social credit score in the nation. I'll be running down a line of people slapping high fives. They'll be cheering. I'm like, that's right, man. We're fighting the system. So,
dude, your digital social profile score is going to be negative. Guarantee it. It's going to be negative.
And they know that I always take a negative and turn into a positive. So they're probably going to even erase any trace that I'm even alive on Earth. This guy's nowhere. He was never even born. I'm like, you better do that because I'm going to have a fun time with every one of these things they bring at us. So there is a way, of course, to push back on these bastards, quite honestly, folks. And that is getting out of the system, like we talked about, John Michael Chambers, in this particular fashion. I'm recommending what I've done. Kirk will tell you, everything I get, if I'm not using it for operations, it goes right into silver. I actually took delivery. Of course, mine's all in the depository, but I took delivery of one of those little plates. You know, that was pretty cool to see that holding my hand. Like, hey, check that out. Or a gold coin, because I finally wanted to own a piece of gold, a 1 ouncer. And so it's kind of cool to have that. And any UMTPs come in here and try to break into my safe to get it, I just want to let you know, for plausible deniability or to let the courts know, it's armed with a booby trap grenade. So just in case you have that idea, you know, I let you know ahead of time. So I'm not responsible for what may happen to an MTP that does break in. Actually, he'll be well ventilated by the time he makes it from that door to the safe anyway, so none to worry. But if you want to go down the route that I have, and many thousands of people have with Dr. Kirk Kelly, pretty simple. You can just look here in the teletype going across. You can go to psfsilvergold.com, type it in, psfsilvergold.com. Do a little research for yourself. If you want them to contact you, put your information in, they'll call you. It's always a wave after a show, so if it takes a day or two, just know they'll get to you. If you're impatient like I am, I got to call them right now. You'll see the phone number. It's right there right now, 720-605-3900. Just give a call. Have a conversation. See what makes sense to you. Where it doesn't make sense to you or your sixth sense isn't comfortable, walk away. You know, and this is just one of the things I've been trying to get people to understand. Learn to listen to yourself, not Scott McKay or the whole world. Learn to listen to yourself, because if you're connected to your creator, you'll know what to do every time. And if it makes sense to you, you know, like I said, it's what I do. I don't, you know, encourage people to do things that I don't do myself. And of course, that's exactly what I continue to do. Protect myself right now with silver, the best play. The exciting thing is when you have it in there, it makes its run great. You know, made a lot of money. But then guess what? Gold's going to eventually make its run. Like, it just does that. So you can switch it all over and have your investment ride a faster horse a second time and just gain more and more ground. But anyway, it's Dr. Kirk Elliott. Always a pleasure. I got two whammies today. I got John Michael Chambers early today and had you. So we had a good day talking finances. So always appreciate your time over there, buddy.
You bet. It's my pleasure. And we will see you next week. Have fun watching the State of the Union. Fun, whatever it's going to be called.
Yeah, put a Y on it. Funny. That'll more likely describe what's going to happen tonight. So, ladies and gentlemen, that's a wrap on the Economic Update. Dr. Kirk Elliott, Patriot Street Fighter out.